Welcome to The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief. Brought to you by the Chicago Wolves.
On Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Ready for the power play?
You're listening to The Hockey Show
on ESPN Chicago.
Welcome to an emergency episode of the Hockey Show podcast with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. Chief, we just finished taping our NHL draft preview podcast. Not a minute or two after that happened, we find out that the Hawks acquire former number one overall pick, former Hart Trophy winner Taylor Hall from the Bruins, also the rights to UFA Nick Foligno. And in return, they send Ian Mitchell and Alec Regula to the Bruins. What do you say about a deal like this? Did you see this coming?
No, and Davidson, he sandbagged us because he took a call right before our interview started with him. And he was like, do you guys mind if I take this call while we're still setting up? I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead. Can I listen? And he goes, no. And he came back with a little smirk on his face, and I know he was talking to Boston. I know he was talking to Boston. He could have leaked it to me. I could have broke the story. Didn't want to do it, but I love the trade. I love the move by Davidson. They need it. You know, everyone's been talking about Max Domi or, you know, who should they go get to play next to Bedard and be on his wing his rookie year. Problem solved. Okay, you have a former MVP, a guy who knows what it means to be a number one pick. And Taylor Hall, a guy who's competitive, fast. You know, he had a nice, what do you have, 61 points last year?
Yeah.
So a bona fide top six type guy who you can put right there on your left wing for Connor Bedard. It's a perfect match. I don't know what they're going to do with Foligno, if they're going to let him walk, but he also kind of fits a profile of, you know, some muscle, some toughness, character, leadership that they would want in their bottom six. Theoretically, you know, we've talked about Lucic and Ryan Reeves potential coming here, but Foligno's not at that level of a heavyweight, but he's not shy about protecting his teammates either. So if they sign him, I think that's not the worst move ever either. So I like both the names coming back, even if it is just Taylor Hall. I think it's great. I'd never really liked Alec Regula, so I'm fine to see him go. And I like Ian Mitchell. I think we've talked about that many times. I don't think he ever got a full fair shake here. It didn't really fit their profile of a defenseman. But I'm happy for him because he's going to a place in Boston, reunite with Monty. And I know Monty really believes in him. So I hope he can get things going and become an NHL regular. So I think it's one of those things where it's a win for everybody that I care about, which would be me. First and foremost, me and my happiness watching the Blackhawks. That's the Taylor Hall component. And then I want to see Mitchell do well, and I think he'll have a good shot.
And so back to the Nick Foligno portion of this, they absolutely want to sign him because he's a UFA. They're going to have exclusive time now before July 1st to re-up him. So to get his rights in this deal, I don't think you do that unless you truly want to make a run at signing him. And I think it's exactly for the reason you said, to have a little protection in that lineup, something that they're lacking right now. I love that for Bedard. And, I mean, how do you think that line looks now? Taylor Hall, Bedard, and to be determined? I mean, I kind of thought Reichel and Athanasiou would start together, but how do you see this line going as far as Taylor Hall and Bedard?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can pencil Taylor Hall in for that left wing spot right next to Bedard. I don't know if Reichel is the right fit as a right winger. Kind of depends. You might want to have a little bit more forecheck and maybe a little bit more size on that line, and maybe you want to split up those young kids and say, hey, like, you guys, Bedard's going to get all the attention with Hall, and Reichel, you're going to kind of get to face the underbelly a little bit as you develop in your first full year as a true NHL player. So however it comes together, I do think Reichel is a top six player long term, as is Bedard. Hall is that right now. So you're starting to formulate a team where it's guys are going to be put in spots where they can be successful, which is the most important thing for their development. So if they're together, I think that's fine. My gut says that Reichel will probably be on that second line, if you will, in the top six, and not having to face the elite, Norris and shut down Selke guys.
Totally makes sense. 2 years remaining on Taylor Hall's deal, $6 million AAV. So, look, they were going to go out. They had money to spend. They were going to go out and bring in some veterans. We talked about, just because you get Connor Bedard and you're still kind of 3 to 4 years away from the championship window opening, you still want to provide him with a talent at wing so that you don't waste his first couple years in the league or stunt his development or, make him question, where his skills are at because you don't put him out there with a quality winger. And I think this checks that box right away. And it also brings in a guy too, another, those are leadership guys. Nick Foligno, yeah, is a type of guy that, I love watching his dad play back in the day, like, or just a hockey family. And I think this also shows you kind of where Kyle is thinking in the short term here. Like, it's not about tanking per se next year. It's about beginning to lay the foundation with some of our young pieces and giving them willing participants to help in their development.
Yeah. So I think there's two other little important notes here for the Taylor Hall thing. Number one is, as far as Bedard is concerned, like, yes, having guys around him, but it's also like, hey, you don't have to do everything. Okay.
Right.
Like, you have players that you can look to, you can lean on, that are going to be in the right spots, because he has that tremendous hockey sense. And there is a thing where it's like, hey, I know where that guy's supposed to be, but he's not there because he doesn't know. Taylor Hall knows where to be. He knows where the goals are. He knows where the points are. He knows how to play in the NHL. So that's a really good thing. Also, I am fairly certain, and I'm not on my computer, but I'm fairly certain Taylor Hall had a no movement clause that he had to waive to make this happen.
There were 10 teams that it became, he had no trade movement clauses with, and the Hawks weren't one of them.
Okay. All right. Well, then that's interesting. I wonder when that list was submitted, because I can't imagine that if it was last year, the Hawks wouldn't have been on that list, but you would think that, that's an easier ask, just because I think the point I was trying to make, which I guess is not relevant, but I think guys are going to want to play with Bedard. And
I agree.
And I think Taylor Hall coming here, he's not young, but he's not old either. He probably looks at this opportunity if he's got 2 years left, where it's like, hey, like, I'm going to be putting up some points and I can get another nice contract in 2 years and set up the rest of my entire life and the rest of my career by playing with Bedard. And I think guys are going to be kind of salivating at the idea of playing with somebody like this.
So Taylor Hall is a Chicago Blackhawk. We're going to see Connor Bedard in a Blackhawk sweater finally on Wednesday night. They're going to have to make an agreement with Nick Foligno, who's pending UFA on July 1st. But a lot happening in Blackhawks land. Let's get back now to our original podcast as we break down the upcoming NHL draft.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
Happy Connor Bedard week to everyone out there in Blackhawks land, and we welcome in Chief from Nashville. How's Nashville treating you so far, Chief?
I love Nashville. I'm not sure I love it at the end of June. I'm not cut out for this. I can't stop sweating. The sweatiest guy here by far.
How's Eddie doing? How's Barstool Eddie doing?
Eddie's doing great. I think he actually might be in the same sweat boat as me, but we're having a great time. Yeah, we opened a bar down here in Nashville. Barstool did, not Eddie and I personally, unfortunately,
but we had a great time out of the bar. All sorts of, you know, NHL guys were there. Lindy Ruff was in attendance. So a weird crew, but a fun crew. And yeah, we've had a great time so far. And our vibes as the Chicago guys are very high. And we're actually going to have a little draft party Wednesday night for Bedard at our bar here.
Oh, excellent. Is it on the main drag?
It's a block off of Broadway, and it's
off of Broadway.
So they're going to have live music there like 7 days a week. It's got a mezzanine level, a patio. It's a spectacular bar, I must say.
Fantastic. So it's a monumental week for the Blackhawks. You don't often get a chance to draft first overall, and it almost never lines up with generational talent like Connor Bedard. But the Hawks, it's six picks in the first two rounds. And you had a chance to talk to Kyle Davidson today. What was your takeaway from that conversation, Chief?
Yeah, you know, he's a very kind of bright, patient, careful guy. And that's what you want out of a GM. And, you know, careful to the point. You know, that airs on that episode will air on our channels on Thursday, so after the draft. And he's, you know, so respectful of the process that, you know, he won't say that they're drafting Bedard, even though the entire world knows that they're drafting Bedard. We just talked about a foundational player, and we kind of got an insight into, you know, how his board is coming together, where it is at this point. Like, he's just like, we're not drafting a specific type of player. We have a ton of defensemen. If the best player on our board is a defenseman, we're taking a defenseman. If it's another small, speedy guy, we're taking that. So this, like, when you're looking at the prospect pool, me as a fan, it's like, all right, well, you're going to have Bedard. He's 5'10". I'm going to give him that quarter of an inch. So he's 5'10". Reichel's not small, but he's not exactly a big guy. Nazar's not a big guy. They don't really have, like, that quintessential power forward. So you would be looking at, you know, me, the meatball fan, a Charlie Strammel, a Quentin Musty, some of these kind of, you know, bigger Callum Ritchie, those types of, you know, like a more of a guy who's like a playoff guy, a meaty, get to the front of the net, big shot, win board battles type of guy to complement their other pieces. Davidson basically said no, that, you know, it could be whoever is their best guy. And then, you know, he's like, we obviously will. You need some size and some roster balance to win, but there's other ways to get that. So if we go through, and you know, you have to add kind of like what Vegas did, where they went out and got a Barbashev, you know, where that's how he's going to, you know, tweak the roster. But on draft day, because these kids are so young, it is strictly, purely best player available was his mantra.
Interesting. Look, the previous regime, Chief, we can point to certain drafts where it was like, okay, they were going to go after a defenseman no matter what. The Boqvist, you know, that draft, it was all defensemen all the time. And then the Doc draft was the tall draft. Every guy they selected was, you know, 6'1" and above. Pretty much. That was Vlasic and several other players that were big. I do think size matters in this league. I think we saw that with Vegas. I think teams that have the ability to keep big bodies away from the net and are able to take it to the net succeed in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you just went over kind of the makeup of the current roster, at least the pipeline that we're going to see with the Blackhawks. They aren't overwhelmingly big people. So I am of the thought that, you know, the traits that they value most are skating and size. I mean, obviously skill and shot and all, you know, willingness and all that. It's all part of the cocktail. But I do think they hold skating and size with high regard. I think you mentioned some of the names. I think you could see the Quentin Musties, the Daniel Butts, possibly if you're gonna look at a defenseman, this is not a deep defensive draft at all. And you could see a Dmitry Simashev, who's a big frame, 6'4" defenseman. Tom Willander is also a big D-man as well. But I'm more with you, the Nate Danielsons, the Sam Hanzeks, the 6'3", 200-pound type winger or center as the type of player that they, A, is deep in this draft, and B, something that this organization needs overall.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I value size more for, you know, as a personally from defensemen. And you've seen that they've added that with the exception of Kaiser, who doesn't play small. I think he's 6 foot. Everyone else is 6'2" and above. So I like that they're adding that they really clearly value size on D. But I think if I'm sitting at 19 and I love what I've seen from that Oliver Moore, the fastest guy in the draft, was a second line guy in the development teams who didn't have all the opportunities. That's really the guy that I love at 19, if he's still somehow there. And he's a small guy too. So the Davidson things, I was definitely leaning that way, but after talking to him today, it does kind of, he's right. Like, you can go find, you can find bigger bodies sometimes. Like, you don't, it is, you just want guys who are capable of playing the NHL. And if you have to go out and get a Barbashev, you have to go out and acquire, you know, there's movement and player movement to be had every summer and every season. And you can tweak your roster, but the most important thing in the draft is just to get as many guys who project to be NHL players as possible, and not, you know, pigeonhole yourself. And you're right. Like, that does appear to me to be the big difference between this current regime and the past one, where the past one was like, hey, like, our analytics, which were, you know, garbage, I would say that their way of looking through analytics was like, oh, we want skilled offensive right shot defensemen have a ton of value. There's really no logic in that. But you saw them draft Jokiharju, Boqvist, Ian Mitchell, and then Nick Beaudin was of that same size, but as a left shot. And none of those guys panned out here, or really kind of, I mean, Jokiharju is probably the best of that bunch. But it's just like, you need to just make sure that when you're picking in the first round, you're getting a guy that is going to be an NHL regular. Because after that, even though they have four, you know, lottery tickets in the second round, but it is much more of a coin flip after outside the first round. So if the best player available is, you know, a forward who's small or another defenseman, I think you just pull the trigger and don't worry about, you know, we need a guy who's 6'2", which they clearly do, but I don't know if that's the right prism to view, you know, team building.
So the big question, it kind of is what they do at 19. Do they move up? They've got draft equity. They've got capital with the 4 second round picks. But they also have cap space, and they can weaponize that cap space and take some bad contracts from other teams and possibly, you know, like a Pittsburgh at 14. If they're trying to get rid of Granlund and you want to take Granlund and move up to 14 and Pittsburgh takes 19, or Vancouver trying to move Connor Garland, do you see that possibly being a thing where he doesn't use his draft capital but tries to use his cap space to move up in that first round?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't ask him that specifically, but when he was speaking generically about the board, you could just see that he was lighting up about how many impact type players are at. He's like, it's a deep draft, but it is also simultaneously a top heavy draft because the top of the draft is so good. So yeah, I think that's probably true. Like, if you look at, you know, maybe the top 12 guys in this year's draft, you know, they're probably in the top 6 in most drafts. Like, there is a lot of talent in this draft. So if you can get, you know, another top, you know, 10 or 12 like you're saying, up to 14, and you're getting more of a surefire guy, a guy that you really have your heart set on. Yeah, and they're in probably the most enviable position on draft day, maybe ever, because they have the number one generational type talent, cornerstone guy in Bedard. They have a top five prospect pool. They have another first round pick and the 4 second round picks and all the cap space in the world. So they have, you know, if you're looking at it, it's like they have a Navy, they have an Army, they have an Air Force, they have everything you need to go to battle on draft day with all those assets. And it's just about applying them the right way. But it's, Davidson did say today that I was asking him how many phone calls he takes per day. And he's like, you know, it's actually been kind of slow. He's like, last year was wild. You know, they started the day with zero draft picks in the first round and ended up with 3. And he's like, I don't know. He's like, it's been a little slow so far this week. So it'll be interesting to see how it comes together. But I would love a Connor Garland. Like, they, you know, they've talked about, you know, the Max Domi thing has been really talked about a lot. Garland does some of those same things where he's a very nice, you know, offensive player who works hard. He's a little undersized, doesn't necessarily have all the bite that Domi has, but he's a good player. I loved him when he was on Arizona. They're going to need some veteran guys to put next to Bedard and Reichel. And if they can take on one of these bad contracts, I mean, Brock Besser from Vancouver, I've seen his name out there a little bit. Yeah, I would love it if they were able to add a guy like that. That's not a long-term commitment.
You know, and Chief, if they're able to do that, if they're able to take a bad contract and move up 4 or 5 spots to get a desired target, a player they really, really want, I can also see, because you said this is a top-heavy draft, that you've got those 4 picks in the second. I can see packaging some of those picks or a future pick and move in the back end of the – I set the over-under 2.5 selections in the first round. I think there's a good chance they could make 3 picks in the first round.
Yeah, I think that's very plausible. And that's, you know, that you know, we've been saying like, oh, pick up a bad contract. There's no such thing as a bad contract for the Chicago Blackhawks. Yeah. It's only bad for these other teams. So, like, those are quality NHL players. They just don't fit in the plans and the cap for the teams that are – they have different goals. So, like, that's the other thing. It's not like the Zaitsev thing, like, he's a bad player. Is it a bad contract for the Blackhawks? I don't think so necessarily. But you're going to be able to get an NHL player that somebody just can't afford. We saw that Nashville just gave away Ryan Johansson for free. They gave away for free and paid half of his salary for the rights to talk to Galchenyuk, who they won't resign. So the Hawks can definitely play in that space. And the 2.5 picks, yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, it is also diminishing returns is probably the wrong way to say it. But how many draft picks do you need, and can you develop all of them if you're taking 6? And then how many? I think you have 2/3 and. Yeah, you know, it's a lot of picks to comb through. So, yeah, if you're like, hey, like, we feel really good about this guy, do you move a couple of picks or, like you said, a future and a bad deal? And I would love it if they ended up with 3 in the first round, because that means that there's a guy that they're targeting that they love. And you saw them do that last year with Sam Renzel. So Sam Renzel was a guy who was, you know, he's a Minnesota high school kid. He wasn't even eligible to go to college yet. They tried to get him to reclassify to get into Minnesota, but just like wouldn't have been able to do all the schoolwork because he was so young. He's probably looking like one. I think he's going to be a stud. People are saying he's one of the best skaters in the world, and he fits their profile. They love him, and I trust this regime to be able to identify these players. So it would be something that got me excited, because it's like, man, like they're really willing to kind of push their chips in, and they got Bedard, they circle somebody else, you know, in the teens, and then hey, like this is our guy at the end of the first round, and you know, we didn't really love the board in picks, you know, let's say 45 to 60, then they can, you know, just rather have 3 great guys that they really feel good about than than the four picks that are kind of lottery picks, you know, like, or like scratch off tickets kind of
thing. Yeah, for sure. Chief, like when we talked to Kyle Davidson at the end of last season, he said basically the odds tell you that you get one NHL player per draft. That's the average. One player that's a significant player for an organization per draft. They're trying to push the limits there and make it two or possibly three. We already talked about how promising last year's draft. If Connor Bedard is a sure thing, and let's just say he's the closest thing to it, you've already got your one player from this draft, and now you're trying to get that second and third. For the Blackhawk fan that's out there, how much have they been able to accelerate the timeline to get this team to championship level because of the ability to pick one overall and then having all these selections in a forward heavy, high skill draft?
Well, yeah. And I think the Bedard, the lottery luck thing, it I don't know if it accelerates it, but it definitely makes it possible. Because you need the McKinnon, Crosby, Kane, McDavid type guy to be able to win the cup. All the teams have them. And no disrespect to Leo Carlson or Will Smith, I don't think they're projected to be that type of a guy. So Bedard, he's going to speed things up in some ways, but he really just lets you dream. Because before, if you don't get one of those guys, you're probably building for a team that ends up looking like the Minnesota Wild. Which is not the worst thing in the world, you know, but it's not what you set out to do. So now you get Bedard, and it's like, okay, we have that special guy that we can, you know, when we need a goal, he's going to deliver. And then you're building around him, and you know that you have a guy capable of driving you through the playoffs. So that's like the most important thing. And then the timeline is, you know, it takes these kids, they're all 17, 18 years old. So it does take them, you know, you're probably looking at a 5-year window to really be in that cup position. But you really hope it's quicker than that, because you kind of want to do what Taves and Kane did, is get that first one before you have to pay the guys when they're on their rookie deals. So you're hoping that it goes really quickly. And me, you know, at this point, like we've been, the last 8 years have been very difficult for us as fans, but in the grand scheme of things, we have been blessed beyond our wildest imaginations with the three cups. I've been so miserable watching this organization that I'm just excited to have fun next year. Porchinski's going to be there. Kaiser, Vlasic, Reichel, Bedard, they're not going to be good, but they're going to be fun. And then you're going to follow the prospects. And before you know it, it's going to be 2025, 2026. And you would hope that they're knocking on the door for a playoff spot. And then it's like, all right, let's pour gasoline on this thing and spend some money and really, you know, really go for it. But there's a long way to go. So accelerating the timeline, I think as things stand right now, the timeline is still the timeline, which is a four-year window, something like that, to really get up in that upper echelon. But, man, it's going to be fun. The chase and the climb is going to be fun. Because you're climbing to the top of Mount Everest. You're not going to base camp, which is the Minnesota Wild. Taking shots at the Minnesota Wild. I like the Minnesota Wild. They're nice people up there. But they don't have legitimate Stanley Cup aspirations the way the Hawks now can with a true number one franchise guy.
Yeah, and like the one thing that you and I had such a hard time saying goodbye to Kane is because he was still a reason to watch the game, even if they were a million games below 500 and had no shot at making the playoffs, 88 could still do something to wow you. And now we've got Connor Bedard to fill that void. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how he is inducted into this franchise and how, you know, like, again, he's going to turn 18 in July. He's going to come here with a ton of expectations. He's coming here with a country that's going to be watching his every move. It's not like, you know, Patrick Kane goes to Chicago and only Chicago is watching him. I mean, the whole nation of Canada is going to be watching Connor Bedard. Connor Bedard highlights are going to be in the mix every night on Sportsnet and TSN. Yep. So that he brings that element and those expectations to Chicago with him. And we always seen, like, remember Patrick stayed in Stan's basement his first year. I think when I was in Philly, I'm pretty sure that Lindros, I know he lived right by Luke Richardson, or there was some connection where Luke kind of, you know, helped bring him kind of into the NHL because he was, you know, obviously a young player as well. It's going to be interesting. Do you see somebody like Seth Jones being that type, or who do you think could possibly, you know, be the guy to mentor Connor Bedard and at least, you know, get him through the personal part of the social part of being an NHL player at such a young age?
Yeah, I think the league is so different and the makeup of the league is so different than it was when Taves and Kane came in, and there's the young guys don't party like they used to. So I don't know how much of that, the name that is, I don't know if that's going to be a concern as much, but you're right. Like, how to be a pro and that kind of stuff and how to be a good guy. The first name that comes to my mind is that nice boy, Connor Murphy. Like, yeah. I think he just got engaged.
Yeah, he did. And he just, he's getting married this, you know, very soon. So
yeah,
I think he had his bachelor party in Nashville last week.
Oh, did he? Yeah, I know he was at Morgan Wallen too. So he must be having a good summer. But yeah. So I don't know. I think Murphy's a perfect candidate for that. It'll be interesting to see if they bring in any, you know, a free agent type guy to do that. And then I also think it's very important to have people on the ice to protect them too. Right. So if they go out and get Lucic or Reeves or somebody like that, I think that's a move that they should genuinely, seriously consider to have a deterrent to kind of protect him, because that's the thing we definitely saw when Kane came in the league, is that he was, you know, he had like that kind of cherubic, like baby face, like, he, you know, the hair, the curls, the blonde. And I remember like that Calgary series when they made the playoffs and there's for the first time, and their guys were pushing him around after every whistle, trying to intimidate him. It didn't work, but that teams will be trying to test Connor Bedard early. And you want him to be able to stand up for himself and fight through it. But eventually it's just like, hey, we got this nuclear deterrent named Ryan Reeves over here. And, you know, stop screwing around with our beautiful baby boy, Connor Bedard. And you're going to need the off the ice leadership, and you're going to need the on the ice protection as well.
Anything that stood out to you also from your conversation with Kyle Davidson today, anything surprise you?
You know, he's just so, like, he's so polished. It's hard to get him, you know, and I was, if I'm full disclosure, like when I had Stan on a couple years ago, 2-3 years ago, that was like an hour long cross-examination. I played nice with Davidson today. So it was more about, you know, looking to the future. But he is very polished. He is very measured. It's hard to get him to kind of to loosen up a little bit. So I hope we get him again because we did have some fun with him at the end. But he's well trained, as you know, with, you know, how much he'll give in an interview. We'll say that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he's been playing the game pretty well here over the last several weeks. You know, at times I think they give you a kernel of information and then they walk it back a couple weeks later and try to throw you off the scent a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that in that second round they are going to select a goalie? Because I think they are going to do that.
Yeah, that would be the spot to do it. And goalies, that has been a problem area for this organization since they drafted Corey Crawford in 2003 in the second round, and he didn't make the NHL until he was 26 years old. They they had drafted a goalie almost every year, but late, and none of them ever worked out. So that's one of those things. It's very difficult to predict goalies and their timeline and just what they are, because there's so much changes from the time of the – it's almost like they should have a separate goalie draft. Like, wait until these kids are 20 and then draft goalies separate. Like, the whole league should just agree to that. So you got it dialed in a little bit
because they take so long to develop anyways. I know what you're saying. You'd rather have them a little bit further down the development path so that you're making a better advised pick or selection there.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I think they like Kemeso, and it sounds like they like Soderblom. But you know, are those guys definitely going to be a number one goalie on a Stanley Cup team? Probably not. Just odd say probably not. So yeah, if you want to roll the dice, if you have all these extra picks and you feel good about, I think they do feel good. And I think they should about their defense core and now their forward group, you know, with, you know, Ryan Green and Bedard and Reichel, like that group starting to come together, especially if they take another forward at 19. Yeah, I would say it's probably a pretty good idea to just, you know, like, hey, like we're going to, for organizational depth and like an insurance policy and, you know, swing for the fences and try to get the right goalie and just almost have like a continuous pipeline. And some organizations have been able to do that. I feel like Pittsburgh has been able to have, you know, a pretty good run of goalies that, you know, they kind of flame out, whether it's Tristan Jarry or Matt Murray. Like, they just seemingly have like an endless run of goalies that they just keep coming. They keep finding NHL goalies in the draft, and you just see how important organizational depth is at that position anyways.
Look at Vegas, right? Aiden Hill exactly. was goalie number
Words
six.
Words out of my mouth with Aiden Hill.
I mean, like, goalie number six won the cup. Exactly. I mean, that's crazy.
And also, how did that guy, how was he goalie number six? He's 6 foot five or six, and he's a really good athlete. It's like, How do they have five guys better than him?
I know. To me, goalies seem like closers in baseball. Like, they'll get on heaters, and you'll be like, this guy can close the door down. But then you're expecting, you know, last year's results to transfer into the upcoming season, and it doesn't quite work out that way. I think we're seeing a philosophy
really
change.
Really good analogy. I like that analogy a lot because it does seem like there's a collection of maybe like five or six guys that you know year in, year out are going to be solid, very good goalies. Everyone else is kind of a crapshoot. Even Bobrovsky, who makes $10 million a year, you can't count on him year to year, series to series.
I mean, he didn't even start the playoffs
exactly.
for Florida. And then I think the philosophy too is changing. Like, it always used to be you're looking for Vasilevsky or your Carey Price or your Patty Waugh or whoever. But now, especially with the condensed schedules and the workload, it seems like most teams are happy with a 1A, 1B where the gap isn't, you know, a quantum huge jump between your starter and your backup. And you end up maybe playing the hotter hand. If 1B ends up being a little bit hot down the stretch, they start the playoffs. And as soon as he goes cold, you go back to 1A.
Exactly. And we saw the Minnesota Wild execute that pretty well with Marc-Andre Fleury and was it Gustafsson this past year where it's like they had a decision to make, but they had two guys that they probably felt pretty good about going into game one. And then it's nobody plays back to backs anymore. The goalies do. So you're no matter what, you're probably, even if you're the backup, you're getting 32 starts a year, probably minimum. So yeah, like if it's hard to find, like Vasilevskis don't grow on trees. So if you're able to just have, again, it's kind of what we were saying before. You just want to find a guy who you think can play in the NHL. And if there's a goalie sitting there that you feel has a pretty good shot, then yeah, I think from just an organizational depth and a roster construction and salary cap usage, it's a good thing to have a pipeline of, you know, NHL caliber goalies, even if they're not, you know, your typical Vezina guy, you still want to have those types of players in the system.
All right, so it's a huge week. 11 selections the Hawks have. I don't think they'll make all of them. I think you'll see at least one or two moved for them to up their positioning in the draft. You've got Connor Bedard finally putting on that Blackhawks sweater. That's going to be a special moment for Blackhawks fans and quite frankly, for hockey fans across the world. And it also, at the end of this week, we've got free agency starting. We're hearing that Jonathan Toews is going to make his decision here in the next week or so. You have any gut feeling on how you think that might go for Toews about his future?
I think he's probably done. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he is too. I think the only thing that I could see him doing is possibly keeping the door open to say, like, you know, my body still hasn't responded to what I've gone through. I don't exactly even know what I've been dealing with. I right now, I'm not going to continue my career, but, and I'm not going to file my paperwork. I'm going to see that, you know, maybe somewhere in December or January, if somehow he found that he was back to what he used to be before the pandemic. And then he might join a team late in the season, something like that. But my gut tells me the way last year went and just kind of what he's gone through over the last few years, I think there's a good chance that he'll hang him up.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be such a hard decision to walk away from something you've been doing since you were 3-4 years old.
Right.
And kind of walking into the abyss where you just don't know. It'd be funny. It would be kind of funny if both Toews and Kane signed somewhere in December. You know, it's like they, no matter what, they just can't really get away from each other. Not that they would sign with the same team, but just that they're on the same kind of timeline, because Kane with his hip injury, are you hearing that he's going to sign somewhere in July, or is he going to wait?
Yeah, I don't think he'll sign in July, but you saw the video that was put out in the last couple of days. He's already skating on that synthetic ice. He's shooting. I hear, so like he's making, you know, kind of East Coast his home right now, training there, coming back to Chicago, working with Ian Mack a little bit. I hear there's talk he's going to end up going to Toronto later on in the summer for part of his rehab. So no surprise, Chief. 88's going full bore on this rehab. And, you know, just like a Marchand pushed the envelope and his return, you know, he's the guy that's going to push the envelope. And I think, you know, there's got to be some teams out there that saw that video. This guy 3 weeks removed from hip surgery, already skating as you know, pretty enticing and at least piqued their interest into getting him for a year or two on a deal.
I hope he's magic again. I haven't actually seen that clip. But Davidson actually referenced it in our interview. It's clear that Kane's not coming back here from that interview.
Right.
But it's the league is generally aware of it. So after we hang up, I'm gonna watch it, because the league's better when Kaner is Kaner. And
yeah,
no matter where he ends up, I want those highlights. I want him to be special. I'm always going to be a Patrick Kane fan. And I would, you know, I would love to see him terrorize defensemen again, because the way that he attacks the ice and breaks it down, he's so smart, he's so good. I'd hate to see to have his career end because of an injury. So I hope he comes back and is himself.
Did you push Kyle on that at all? I mean, you know, he's always said that he wants that room to organically come up with their own leadership and not defer to 88. Of course, you know, we heard your thoughts on he'd be the perfect guy to bring Bedard into the league.
Yeah.
I mean, who better to know what a number one overall? I mean, on and on. We don't even need to get back into that. But did you push Kyle at all on
Eddie was on the interview with me. He asked that at, at the very end. I was not gonna bring that up because I could spend, we had like 25 minutes with him, something like that. I could have spent the whole 25 minutes arguing about that.
I know you could.
The way the exit went, and anybody who's listened to this show, they know how I feel about that. And it's one of those things where it's like, I wish Davidson wouldn't say that you know, you want to clear the deck and let these guys do their own thing, because no other team really does that. And he's not even doing that with this team, because he's going to be looking for other leaders to step up in their absence. So that it's almost like it just, the logic behind that answer, I think they need to flush that media answer out about Kane a little bit, because I don't think it makes sense. And I don't think Bedard is deferring to anyone. Okay. He's not, like, he's wired differently. And so I don't, and we saw, and that's what you want. You don't want him to defer. And you saw, you know, what type of player DeBrincat became. And you know, we've talked about this so many times. Kane is and has been a good leader and a mentor for young players. So, you know, the hip kind of, you know, complicates it a little bit. But I'll never let that go. I think he should be here if he wants to be here, and because it's good for the organization.
Well,
no, to answer your question, I didn't push him because I knew that's one of those things where I would get bogged down and then we'd never get another
answer. Oh, and by the way, sorry we weren't able to talk about the draft.
Yeah.
My 25 minutes is up with no Kyle Davidson.
I'm never talking to you again.
So one last question about the top of the draft. You know, it's going to be Bedard, obviously. I assume Fantilli will go two overall to Anaheim. Then you got kind of the draft starts there. It's the Leo Carlsons, the Will Smiths, and the Matvei Michkov. Where do you think Michkov will end up going? To me, it's got to be a front office that is relatively new and that has a long leash. They're not anywhere near a hot seat waiting for Michkov to play for them in 3 years.
Yeah, I wonder. See, I kind of think almost like Davidson obviously has a long leash, but I'd have to think about the rest of the league, because it feels like there's been so much turnover, and owners come in and it's been 2 years. I don't feel it. Boom. You're out. We're going a different direction. So I don't know if that's a factor. I feel like the lowest he would go is probably Washington, right?
At eight. He doesn't get by Washington, but I think Philly, you talk about a new regime. I could see Keith Jones pulling the trigger on that at seven, right before the Capitals as well. Because
should we call Sharpie and ask him?
Let's call Sharpie. How about that? How surprised were you? Because, I mean, I thought he was a natural at TV. Like, clearly he was. I mean, TNT wanted him. But, like, how surprised were you that he kind of picked, like, I want to get back in to hockey ops? He's almost like the Soupy Campbell, Soupy Campbell is to the Hawks. That's kind of the role Sharp has taken with the Flyers.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all, to be honest, because I don't think he ever really loved doing the media stuff. He was just looking for that next thing. And he is one of those guys, and he and I have talked about this. I said this to him when he retired, that he should do hockey ops. And he's like, it's a grind. I got the girls. And he's right about that. But he's so competitive that I don't think that he could properly scratch that itch by doing TV. So I was surprised a little bit that it was Philly. But I'm not surprised that he's getting out of broadcasting. I would have loved it if he, and I sent him a text on this when the Hawks were doing their whole shakeup, I was praying that he'd have a seat right next to Paul Bissonnette, because Sharpie is so funny. He's so quick that he would be like the perfect kind of guy. Like TNT brought in Shaq and Barkley. They instantly had that connection. I love the TNT broadcast. I feel like they need one more guy to get to that. Like, this is the best show on TV. Not even just the best hockey show, which it already is, the best show. Just the best show, period. And I thought Sharpie would have been perfect in that role if he wanted to do that. But I'm not surprised that he went the hockey ops route, just because he loves to compete. He wants to try to win everything.
So if Blackhawks fans that are listening to this podcast are making the trek to Nashville, will you be hanging out at the new Barstool Bar all week?
Yeah, we're having I'm sure that all the Preds fans down here will love that we're throwing a Blackhawks draft party right in their face, but that's going to start at 5 p.m. Central Time, so we'll be there through at least the first two picks. So, yeah, we're probably going to be there the majority of the night. So, yeah, that's going to be it's 123 South Street or something like that, South 2nd Street.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. I'll tweet it out. But, yeah, I'm going to be there. It is a time to celebrate. It's not – these players don't come along. And
no.
We're so lucky to have them, and this is a party town, and it's going to be a fun night.
So I'll be at a party here in Chicago. I'm going to be at the Salt Shed with a couple thousand Blackhawks fans.
I heard it was 6,000.
6,000?
Someone told me it was going to be like 6,000 people.
I did not realize that. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so 6,000 fans will be at the Salt Shed on Wednesday. We're going to have it on NBC Sports Chicago beginning at 6:30. We think Bedard's selection will be around 6:20 or so. So we'll blow that out. We'll have Panger will be there, Chris Vosters, Bickle will be in the house, Adam Burrish, Ben Eager, Pat Foley will be there as well. Oh. So Kaylee Chelios. We'll kind of hang out with the local group and party here while you do the partying in the hockey tonk.
Well, I'll FaceTime you and we'll toast to Bedard at some point because
fantastic.
Like that party sounds like it's going to be unbelievable up at the Salt Shed. That's a very cool venue. I'm not sure if you've been there yet. I think
I have not yet
for that, for draft night. And I'm really happy to be down in Nashville, but a part of me wishes I was back there with you because I think that event's going to be great.
Well, we will have another podcast dropping later this week when we put a bow on the 2023 NHL entry draft for the Blackhawks. Chief, a lot of fun, big week for the organization. Have fun in Nashville and hydrate, my friend.
I'll try my best.
That's going to do it for the Hockey Show podcast. We'll catch you next time.
You're listening to the Hockey Show on Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app, 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.